Welcome to Afros in the Diaspora. My name is Sarah. I am your host, and together we will vent, rant, laugh, and cry as we discuss the highs and lows of being an immigrant. Stay tuned for stories that will inspire, inform, entertain, and give hope. This is Afros in the Diaspora. What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Afros in the Diaspora podcast. And today we have Priscille all the way from the DRC, but now based in Canada. How are you doing?
I'm doing so good. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm very excited.
Same here. I've been looking forward to it, so I'm super excited.
Yes, awesome. All right, we're going to dive into these trivia questions as I prepared you, right? Because people are saying I didn't tell them, but lies. Oh,
no, I hope I don't embarrass my country here.
No pressure. What is the capital of DR Congo?
Yeah, I'm going to say Kinshasa.
Okay, clap for yourself. You get 1 point.
It's an easy one.
Where is it? It's located up directly opposite another city.
Directly opposite. I'm going to say Goma.
No, this one is, I think it's almost considered the like second capital city.
Okay, let me say Lubumbashi.
Okay, I'm not helping out. So it's Brazzaville.
Oh, I would not have guessed it.
All right, now I have a full on question for you. This one has options too. The capital of DR Congo, Kinshasa, is located directly opposite Brazzaville. The two capital cities are separated by the Congo River. Named after a Belgian king, what is the former name of Kinshasa? And the options are Jacksonville, Smallville, Leopoldville.
I'm going to say Jacksonville for some reason. Wait. Your face is like, step away. Oh my gosh. I feel like there was a French name that was like something like Jadoville. And I don't know, but it sounds like Jacksonville. Oh my gosh, people are going to hate me for it. I don't know.
Leopoldville.
Oh, no. Okay.
You know all these white people come and say they discovered a continent where people already existed, you know? Yeah, and name it after themselves. Yeah, that's exactly what that was. Okay, your next question. The DRC is a giant nation located in...
Central Africa.
All right. How big, yeah, you got it. Just how big is DR Congo? So I have a few statements here. You tell me which one's closest or the correct one. So DRC is the world's second largest country after Russia. DRC is larger than the world's largest landlocked country, which is Kazakhstan. DRC is larger than the continent of Australia. DRC is the second largest African country after Algeria.
I'm going to take that last statement, the second largest after Algeria.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm like, Kazakhstan. What does that have to do with DRC?
All these other ones, I'm like, no.
What? Okay. So the nation of DR Congo straddles the equator. Due to this location, the nation is known to be one of the few countries in the world that experiences high frequencies of which of the following weather phenomena? A dust storm, thunderstorm, hailstorm, snowstorm.
I'm going to say thunderstorm.
Thunderstorm.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you're not deaf like that. Or snow.
Yeah, thunderstorm. You got that one. Look at you. You're doing great.
Yeah, I feel good about this. I feel good.
Yeah, 100%. In 2007, a rocket had been launched successfully in DR Congo. What was the name of the Congolese rocket family established by Okasi? The name also refers to the lowest layer of the Earth's atmosphere. One, or A, troposphere, B, biosphere, C, microsphere, D, hemisphere.
I'm going to say troposphere.
And you'll be correct.
Yeah! Oh my God!
Was that just a guess?
Yeah, that was totally a guess, but the other ones, I don't know. They didn't sound right.
Well, you're doing great. Like, I think you've lost one so far, so well done.
Going.
Yes, so am I. So am I. You're killing these. Okay. What is the official language in DRC?
I'm gonna say French.
I thought if you're gonna say, I'm gonna say Spanish. But I've been like,
no, I don't like. I don't want to say French because it technically is a colonizer language. But I think it is the official.
It is the official. Yeah. I mean, English is, you know, the colonizer language, but that's apparently the.
There's a lot of people though. I mean, they do speak it, but there's so many other languages, but mm-hmm. French it is.
Yeah, French it is. It's the official one.
When you said trivia, I was like, no, let me make sure I know my... I don't want to embarrass myself.
You did so good. So, like, well done.
Thank you. I'm proud of myself.
Yes, proud of you too. All right, let's ask you a couple of riddles. What is the longest word in the dictionary?
I couldn't tell you.
No,
I have no idea.
Well, yeah, the longest word in the dictionary is smiles because there's a mile between each S.
Yeah. Oh my gosh,
that is so corny.
That's so corny. I was thinking something so deep, and I was like,
scientific. It smiles because there's a mile in between. Like,
I'm gonna use that. I think it's corny, but it's good.
Yeah, 100%. Okay. What travels around the world but stays in one spot? I feel like there could be a few answers to this one, but.
Is that your friend?
Yeah, that could be an answer, but it's not the answer of this particular riddle.
But stays in the same place. Oh my gosh. What stays in the same place but travels around the world? The sky.
Just think of another corny thing. Just like, assume the answer is
arms or something like that. I don't know. I can't tap into the corniness. I don't know.
You can't tap into it. All right, a stamp.
Oh my god. Yeah. Okay, I can see that. Oh, I would never have guessed. Where are you getting these questions?
From the internet. I'm getting them from the internet. Let me ask you a couple more, and then we'll get into our topic. This one's very common, but I'll say it nonetheless. Mary's father has 5 daughters: Nana, Nini, Nene, and Nono. What is the 5th daughter's name?
Okay, so can you repeat it again?
Yeah, Mary's father has 5 daughters: Nana, Nene, Nini, and Nono. What is the 5th daughter's name?
It's Mary.
There you go.
You
go.
I had to just make sure that you had said 4 names.
And yeah.
I was like, one left, so it has to be Mary.
Yeah. Is it Nini? Is it Nunu? Is it... No.
Like, there's no way I have to make up a name.
Awesome. Okay, final one.
Okay.
In a 1-story pink house, there was a pink person, a pink cat, a pink fish, a pink computer, a pink chair, a pink table, a pink telephone, and a pink shower. Everything was pink. What color were the stairs?
It said it was 1-story. There's no stairs.
All right.
Yay.
Yeah, you got it.
Run me the riddles. I got to. I'm good at this. Family Feud, here I come.
Yeah, let's go.
Good. I enjoyed those.
Yes, awesome. Thank you so much. Those were a few of them. I mean, all of them were corny, but. You know,
they were good.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you for engaging with me in this, you know, just get the blood pumping, the blood flowing. Yes. To get the senses tingling, you know. Awesome. All right, we're gonna dive into our topic for today, and today we're just kind of chatting about our, you know, being an immigrant, especially a newcomer. Mm-hmm. And like some of the culture shocks you experienced, and yeah, we'll go from there. So okay. Priscilla, please tell us your immigration story of what, you know, what your story is. How did you move to Canada? And what was that process like for you?
Yeah, I feel like my immigration story honestly started from when I was born, because I was born in Congo.
Sorry, 1 second. Are you wearing a Congo, a DRC, like, yes, bracelet? Okay, yes. All right.
I was like, you know what, let me represent.
Yes, heck yeah.
Yeah, so I was born in Congo, and shortly, like 6 months after I was born, we moved to South Africa. And already I'm already an immigrant somewhere else, and there is such a culture, but like it's a change. Like they speak English, they speak Zulu, they speak so many different languages in South Africa. And when we moved there, we barely had any family there. And so already my journey has started as an immigrant outside of my country. And this is during the apartheid in the 90s where I was born. And so, you know, I already feel the tension. I was young, but there was like, I was scared. I was scared in South Africa, but you know, it's still home and it's still there. I'm surrounded by Black people, so that's fine. So I think in around 99, I guess I knew we were moving around 1998, that we had plans to move to Canada. And it was like so much excitement, like, oh my gosh, what's it gonna be like? You know, you don't have any reference. And at the time, you don't have computer. You don't have that to go, let me search up where we're going type thing. It's all going to be brand new. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, in 1999 of April, we made the move to Canada. So it's been 25 years. So this year was very nostalgic for me to really think about, like, at April 2nd, I believe it was. Mm-hmm. I really reflected, like, oh, my gosh, I've been here for the majority of my life in Canada. Tracing back 1999, we moved here, my entire family. At the time, I had four siblings, two older brothers and two older sisters. My little sister is born here in Canada. She was born a year after we moved here. So I was like 7 years old when we moved here. We landed in Toronto. It was a fairly like big trip. You know, we had to go to Greece first. We had a night there and then we landed in Toronto. And I think the biggest thing first to mention is my dad was very keen on we all have to travel together. He was not leaving anybody behind. And that's such a privilege that I didn't realize until many years later to see how so many families come in separate and or they haven't seen their families in so long because one family member comes and then tries to get everybody to come. And I never went through that. Like, and so that's something I'm very like privileged to have had, where my dad was like, we all go, like we all have to go or we're not going. Mm-hmm. And honestly, before we actually even landed in the country, we already had our permanent residency. We got it in South Africa. And then by the time we came, we had it. And then, yeah, Toronto, and we took the Greyhound. Shout out to Greyhound. Matt, that has been many years. It doesn't exist anymore. But we took the Greyhound from Toronto and drove 3 days to get to Calgary. And that was a trip that at that time I was like, I will never in my life do this again.
Again.
It was full. And it was people from every walks of life at that point. It was like everybody was an immigrant in that bus. And all going different places and stuff. And I distinctly remember stopping in Manitoba. And we got out of Manitoba. We're taking a break there. And all I see is snow covered. And that was like, I had never seen that in my life. And so this is like a vivid memory in my mind where we got out. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, what is this? This is so crazy. Like, this is so different. Like, but there's still an excitement, but also scared because it's like, holy crap, this is cold. Mm-hmm. Like, this is really cold. And I don't really have good clothes for it. And then we got out, we like threw snowball at each other, you know, because we've seen that in the movies.
In the movies.
You know, like that initiation of like, welcome to Canada type thing.
Yeah.
And then we continued the drive and we made it to Calgary. And since then, I've been here all my life. I haven't moved anywhere else. I've lived in Calgary for 25 years, and I call it home. And that's, in a nutshell, that's the journey of coming to Canada. And I'll leave it at that for now.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that, Priscilla. Man, that snow initiation is real. Because it's real. I moved here as a young adult. I moved here for university, like my first year of university by myself without my family. And so in Nigeria, there's no snow. The worst of the worst you can ever have is Harmattan, where it's our, I guess it's dry season, but it's also when the wind blows from the north. So everything's dry. So that's when at that time, like, you know, you have to rub Vaseline on your skin. You have for that period of, so, cause you know, we only have two seasons, rainy season and dry season. So it just was, you know, but I remember that, like, that was when everyone would be cold or we go wear your sweater, go out, you're not. But when I moved here, and I moved ending of August, just into the school year, because school was supposed to resume September 3rd or something like that. Yeah. So like maybe 27, 28 was when I landed. And I landed with my mom because I'd never been outside of Africa before. So she's like, let my daughter not go on. Let her not miss her road though before she went that flight going to Dubai or when she's supposed to be going to Canada. So my mom came with me and she left after like maybe a week of just helping me settle. But as of that late August, like folks are wearing like tank tops and like short shorts and like t-shirts. And, you know, you'll be on the road, you see some, you know, white guy on the street without any shirt at all, just bare at the top and just with bottoms. And I was like, is it the same feeling in the skin that we're all feeling? Because I am freezing. I don't know what you're talking about here. Like for me, ending of August was cold. Yeah. So I could not fathom in my brain what October, November, December, January, February was going to be like. So while people were like, I'll go outside, my mom would just wear her long pants and maybe have a sweater just in case she starts to feel cold. But I was like,
Oh my god.
I was so like, I wasn't layering. I didn't know much about layering. You just wear your t-shirt or your top underneath and then you wear a sweater on top. That's what I did. Because I heard Canada is cold. So I got there in August, ending of August, and I'm like, this is what people are talking about. Canada is cold. I did not know what I was supposed to be waiting for in the future. I did not know. As the days got shorter and all that stuff, which was also like very jarring for me. And then I think the very first snowfall was in October, like the very first big one, the very first big snowfall. And I was in, you know, university residency. I came outside. You know how you look in the window like, is this snow is falling? No, I see this snow that they've been talking about this whole time. Snow, I will see this snow with my eyes. Yeah. This particular snow that they'll be saying, have you seen a Hollywood film? They'll do like this in the floor, like snow angels, like, So I came down like a bush woman that I am. I came downstairs. I came downstairs and I just started staring up.
Yeah.
And then you know how it will like fall in your face? And I'll open my mouth.
Who hasn't done that?
And I'll taste it. And then I'll open it again. And this was in the evening. It wasn't that late. Let's say around 8, but it was already really dark, right? Yeah. So my shameless self, people were around me. People were walking, going, doing their thing. I did not care. I did not send anybody. Nobody sent me. I came here to this Canada with my own. So I just, I wrote my name in the snow, S-A-R-A-H. I carried the snow like this and I squeezed it and I just threw it at nobody because there was obviously I was by myself and I just was doing a snow fight with myself. Like it was a whole.
You did that too.
It was a whole experience. I didn't lay on the floor because at that point it would have called security for me, but I just like played with it. I took videos of like selfies with the snow. Like I was a proper bush girl and I'm very proud of it because I knew nothing about snow and it was like you were saying my proper initiation of you know the cold in Canada.
Yeah, it's a big, like, wow, what is this? Like, it's covered the entire land.
Yeah.
You know what? I remember one time in South Africa, it kind of had snowed. I was, like, in kindergarten, and I'd see...
Oh, does it snow in South Africa?
Like, not often, but it happened, like, rarely. I remember being like, well, what is that white stuff that I saw on the ground? I wasn't sure what it was. But by the time I finished like school and I head downstairs, it already melted. It didn't stick to the ground.
Right.
But I know for a fact that I had seen it and I could not, like at that time, I didn't have any reference. So I had no idea. what that was. It's only when I moved to Canada that was like, I recollected that memory and
right.
Like, oh, that's what that was when I was younger, because I couldn't figure out. I was like, what is that? What's happening to the ground? Why is it white?
Why is it white?
It's so crazy, like, how you don't know and you're so aware of, like, you don't know what it is.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And like, the photos and stuff that I sent, you know how like Snapchat was the thing back in like 2015, yeah. I think, ages. So I had like Snapchat and I was active on there. And like all the photos and videos that I took, I put them on Snapchat. And then my friends were just like, this bush woman has started again. Like, the comments were hilarious. They're like, Sarah, will you enter inside your house? Can't you see there are people around you? Like,
wow.
But yeah, no, we're shameless. So I can't. I was JJC, Jolly Just Come. Mm-hmm. I was like, this Canada, I will experience it. Is it the snow? I will experience it to the fullest, you know? So. What are some cultural shocks that you experience? And of course, we just talked about one big one, which is snow. Yeah. But yeah, may I ask, like, what are some of those things that you experienced that were like, wait, what?
Not even just snow. It was like the entire weather system.
Oh, of course.
That shocked me and stuff. And really, like, it still shocks me to this day. Because even, like, the little things, like, I remember in South Africa loving rain. I used to love being out in the rain. Even one time where it was, like, I got caught in a dangerous rain, and I thought I was going to die in South Africa because it was, like, intense. Mm. But I still loved the rain, and I couldn't figure out why I hated the rain here in Canada. I was like, what is going on? Like, I did not like to be caught in this. It's because it was so cold. The rain was freezing cold rain that would fall, and I was like, oh, that's what it was. Like, that's the difference. Right. So that in itself, the whole weather system is like a culture shock. Mm-hmm. But just like in terms of like where I went to school and just being with a different group of people and different culture, I remember going to my friend's house and their mom would introduce themselves and she's like, hi, like, my name is Sophie. You can call me Sophie. In which world am I going to call you Sophie by your name like that? You know what I mean? I'm like, no.
Yeah.
Like, do I say Auntie Sophie? Like, right. You know, like, it was a culture for me, and it's honestly to this day, I have trouble like doing that, because in our culture, it's very like elder respect. You know, we're so big on that, and we don't just call people, older people, by their first name. That's not appropriate.
Yeah.
So just hearing that, I couldn't even like get behind it. So I wouldn't even say the name. I'll just say hi, because I couldn't fathom my mouth saying their first name like that. To this day, my best friend, she's Asian, and I think they're so big on their culture too. I greet her with hi mom as well. I say hi mom. Yeah. I will not call her Elizabeth. You know, I won't do that. That's like a huge culture difference. Mm-hmm. Another culture shock, I would say, is pets, to be honest. Like, seeing pets in the house and pets as family members.
Oh, my fur babies. Oh, my dog. Yeah. My dog baby. Oh, my son. My.
You never, honestly, I don't even recall seeing pets when I was in South Africa. Nobody had a pet. So to come to Canada and every student had some sort of pet, like something. If it's not a cat, it's a dog. If it's not a dog, it's a fish. If it's not a fish, it's a turtle. If it's not a turtle, it's a hamster. Now, the hamster part, that's an even bigger culture change, because me, I'm thinking they have rats.
Yeah.
That was like, that's what was like, I was like stunned. I went to a sleepover and the girl pulled out her hamster. I was these are the rats that were running around when we were back home, and now you have them in cages in your house. My god. Oh my gosh. And then I remember the mom being like, just put out your palm and the hamster is gonna walk on your hand. I put out my hand for a sec. I'm like, nope. I like pulled it up. I was like, I cannot get behind this. The hamster part was like, I can understand cats, dogs, but hamster to me was like, that's a rodent. You have a rodent in your house, like, and you're taking it up and calling it a pet. I come now to realize they're different, because like just recently my sister got a cat, and now she's in Congo right now, and the cat is here with us, and like he's part of the family. Now I like get like 25 years later, I'm like, okay, I can see what cats are about. But at the time, it was stunning. It was like, whoa, I did not know. But that at the top of my mind, that those are like the kind of culture shakes, shocks that like come up right away.
Yeah.
What about you? What about
girl, I could absolutely the two that you just mentioned. Yeah. I think the cats for me was a very big one. I mean, pets, because growing up, there were dogs, but there were no inside dogs, right? People would have pets, but the pets are outside. There's a cage for it in the balcony or like outside the house. You bring your food to it. You can take it for a walk if you want to. You can release it from the cage. It knows its way back home. But inside, nah.
Yeah.
Nope. For people that have like compounds, even better. For people that but you see that that thing of having cats or dogs or pets, period, in your house, inside dogs. What? Yes. And not only are there like inside dogs, they also wear like coats and little sockies. and some of the names you see like really like human names like Max and things like, what? A dog is Bingo. What do you mean by Max?
Oh my gosh. I'm like, I'm really weird.
A dog is Bingo. What are you talking about with Max and you know, some of those human names but are dog names, you know? Oh, or like the dog needs grooming, and so there's actually someone with a job whose job is to wash your dog? Yeah. What? Like there's actual
for pets.
Yeah. Like you have actual dog food. Dog food is like you eat chicken, you give a little bit of chicken to the dog, you give a little bit of, you know, and they eat it, right? Like you give them the bones and they're good, like, and they're healthy dogs, like. But the thing is, growing up, some of those dogs were mean. Like the owners could literally sick them on people. Anyway, that I have been chased by dogs so many times in my childhood that like seeing people actually just like, oh, who's my cutie little doggy, and I'm like, wait, what? And then you know how people make out with their dogs? I cannot understand that. That is not a thing that people do in my home. Like, I just have never seen that before.
Something is correct, like being chased by a dog. We, like, dogs were known to protect the property.
Yeah.
So coming here, we have an instinct fear of dogs.
Yep.
There's so many times I've got chased by dogs and I ran for my life.
Yep.
And they're like, oh, he's friendly. I'm like, no. The way
PTSD.
PTSD.
Yeah.
We all have that. I feel like a bunch of other countries, not in North America, feel that, because I have memories of me and my friend hugging a tree. My best friend, Abigail, because there was a dog around us and we stayed there for hours because we couldn't come down. And that's like, no, I'm like, we grew up in a different place where dogs are not your pet.
They're their owner's pet. They're nobody else's pet.
There's nobody.
You're a danger to the owner until the owner says, down, boy.
Yeah, sorry. Tell me your dog is friendly doesn't do anything for me.
Yep, nothing. It's your pet. It's a danger to me. Like, and then cats. Cats was another thing where, like, you know, when it comes to spirituality in Africa.
I know exactly. Yeah.
When it comes to spirituality, cats are like the, like, if you're... How do I even begin to even put this into words? Like, you know, I don't know if you ever saw those Nollywood movies where, like, like, if a witch or a wizard or the people in their cult or whatever is doing their demon worship or whatever, if they're trying to change into an animal, they change into a black cat.
Yeah.
And so... And, you know, that idea was also very, very much, like, put forward by Nollywood in their films that they would make. So you see it and you're like, see, this happens in real life. And in Nigeria, people don't play with cats.
Yeah, like, and you can't even say it here because they're going to call PETA on you for the things that happen to cats.
100%, 100%. And like, you know how like from your house, you have to like go throw away the garbage, but it's not like at your backyard. You have to maybe walk a little bit to like, in our house, I refused to throw away. And my mom would usually ask the boys at night, like my brothers, to throw away garbage. And everybody, whether it's myself during the day or at night, once it's dark, they're like, mommy, please, I'll go during the day. Because there are some cats that hang around the garbage just to like, you know, wild cats just digging there for food. But by the time you see those glowy eyes at night, blood of Jesus, blood of Jesus, blood of Jesus, blood, that's literally what you're chanting. Yeah. You're chanting blood of Jesus to go throw away garbage because you're like, whose grandmother is this? Whose grandmother is this that has come for me? Which of my village people are these? Like, you will literally, like, lose your mind. Like, just pray God protect me as I go through this garbage. It is just garbage you're going to, you know, dispose of. But it was a spiritual battle because there were cats there, you know? So anyway, that's my background. Being a Nigerian with cats. Like, having pets, like cats as pets was not a thing, was not a concept. Actually, I do not know one person before I moved to Canada. And by the time I moved to Canada, within my first like month, because new to the department, there were, you know, things like potlucks, things like that. Like people just invite me to their house. Oh, hey, you're from Nigeria. Oh, so nice to meet you. Da, da, da. You know, just be friendly, which I really appreciated. But this professor invited me to her house and she had two cats. And she didn't tell me before inviting me to her house. It was a potluck thing. Everyone brought food, da, da, da. And I went there and like I entered and then I just felt some, you know, you just feel something rubbing your leg. And I was like, wait, what is, and I was startled. Like, what is that? Oh, it's little, like, let's say Sammy. Oh, Sammy, come here. It was a black cat. What are you talking to me about little Sammy? Like, what? In my head, I'm like, okay, Sarah, you're surrounded by white people. You cannot jump and shout the blood of Jesus because right now. So in my mind, I just was like, oh, is that Sammy? Wow. I was shaking in my head. I was like, the blood of Jesus. I'm covered by the blood of Jesus. God, I beg. Like literally. And you know, oh, and she get the cat. Like, you know how they pet the little like cats and things. And in my head, I'm like, is she petting a demon? What is going on?
Oh my God.
But that's it. That's the context that I know cats from, is that they are demonic and they are like evil and they are all these things.
They have a bad reputation.
Yeah, bad, bad, bad reputation. So the cat, the pets one was big for me too. And also like everyone here, even like in Nigeria, university in Nigeria, those that are professors, you call them by their doctorates. You cannot, my name is Dr. Sarah Uwajai. Please address me accordingly. So, you know, like they take titles like that, titles and things like that very seriously. Meanwhile, here in school and the dressing too, like for the most part, not all the time. Some people, you're either wearing traditionals, which is trads, or during work hours, you're wearing your tie, your suit, or even in the bank, everyone's like so formal, like your tie is choking your neck, your jacket, your shoe, like. But here, like bankers are wearing t-shirts and jeans. Hello, is my money safe with you? What are you talking about?
Oh my God.
So that was and then the professors here, oh, just call me by April, or just call me by, oh, and they like, yeah, just call by their name, like, and then casual formal, I guess, dressing, like, nobody took that title seriously. But in Nigeria, that sometimes getting a PhD can take you up to 10 years. Wow. They're like, I would rather die than for you to not call me by my doctor. Do you know what I went through? To get this, you know, degree and all their PhD and stuff. So, like, the titles are incredibly important. Like, but here, very casual. Like, the first time I saw the head of the School of Performing Arts, that is literally in charge of music, dance, like, the entire faculty, this guy was wearing jeans, like, a turtleneck t-shirt. He had a piercing on his ear. I'm like, wait, who?
Yeah.
This PhD, this freaking doctor, and he's a doctor, too. You have a piercing as how, you know, like that. Yeah. So those are some more things that, like, the bank one really threw me off because I'm like, are you the robber that came to rob the bank, or you are the one handling my money? Because how are you wearing t-shirts and jeans?
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you a banker? Because in Nigeria, like, sometimes they have like color codes where you cannot wear anything but white and black and a touch of red, right? Oh. So, you know, even the ladies, like, white, your dress skirt, your shoes, your high heels, your coats, your hairdo must be very professional. Your this must be. And here, everybody's just wearing everything.
Yeah.
It shocked me, oh.
Yeah.
Do you have any other like cultural shocks that you remember?
Yeah, when you said the dressing up, like, okay, for church, we always have to dress up for church.
Yeah.
You know, and like for the longest time when we were kids, my mom would like pick our dresses and pick what we want to wear. And I remember us going to like full gospel church at the time, and sometimes you just see people just dress casually. And it was like, oh, so you're not going to wear a dress? Like, as girls, we were always in dresses. We were always in dresses. So just to see people, I mean, to this day, I'm just like, oh, my gosh, people just dress casually at church. It was such a, like, a thing. It's such a culture thing. Like, we get dressed for church.
Called Sunday's Best for a reason.
Yeah.
What do you mean by you're not wearing your best on Sunday? Like, what do you mean by you're wearing jeans?
Yeah, I've never my dad,
that was a shock.
Always in a suit all the time. We were always dressed up. We had our little shoes that were uncomfortable, but we would wear them, you know, because we had to.
Yeah.
And then you come here and it was just like, yeah, no, their same outfit that was at school is what is wearing at church. So I was just like, oh, wow. Like, you know, and it has no context to your faith or belief, but that's how we were just raised. So it was just like, oh. So
yeah,
you're just gonna jump anyhow to come to the house of God. Like the dressing up, it was just so different. I find it's very, like, Canada is very casual. Everything is casual, you know? So it's always like, now I feel like if I'm dressed up, I'm probably dressed up too much. I already know. But I've accepted it. Honestly, and to this day, I'm like, I know I'm gonna be overdressed, but I just can't help it. It's just how I was brought up, and this I can't just go to these formal event and just be dressed anyhow. Like, I have to dress up like it's Sunday best. So the dressing up, I feel like, definitely was such a difference to like see that. Like, it's like, oh, but it's also nice and relaxing because it was such an intense thing where I, even like after my mom stopped dressing us, it was just like, what am I gonna wear? It's Sunday, what am I gonna wear?
Yeah.
And now to have that pressure lifted off and be like, you know what? I'm gonna just wear my jeans.
100%.
So it's been great to let go of some of those things that really like had us in a chokehold. No, that's all I can think of right now. There's probably definitely some more, but I can't think of it.
Oh, that's all good. And for me, like, with the whole I feel like church as a whole was a cultural shock for me, because it seemed to me like the Jesus we're worshiping in Nigeria is not the same one that they were worshiping here. I've been a Christian all my life, like, we were raised in church, but this kind, gentle God that we're talking about here is not the same fire for fire God.
Yeah, you know what? That's kind of true. It seems like we were striving over there. We were praying in
fire.
Yeah. It was always like a war that we were fighting. Like,
yeah, 100%.
It's like, you know, people.
Just
exactly.
Like, the prayer is not fighting prayer that much. There are some other, of course, other cultural shocks. I mentioned this one before of how it felt like everything, like the volume was low, the ambient sound of the place was low. Like, they just reduced the volume, because growing up in Lagos, first of all, there's traffic everywhere. Yeah. Like, you cannot get from point A to point B, and it's straightforward. There's traffic.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. In addition to the traffic, there are people hawking food all over the road. I look around here, I'm like, there's nobody selling food. You know? There's no traffic. There's no noise. Like, the noise of cars honking and music playing from a store and, like, you know, people talking loud and laughing and whatever the case may be. Like, all of that. Or a church at your backyard. Like, there you can hear their worship, or a mosque over there. You could, like, with their loudspeker on, and, you know, the constant, like hustle and bustle of city life, right? I came here, I'm like, oh, da da, wee, wee. Other than the occasional siren, you will not hear. There's literally nothing else.
It's 9 p.m. Everybody's in bed. It's quiet.
It's quiet. Yeah,
that's very true, because I remember, Johannesburg, it's a big city.
Mm-hmm.
At night, there was something always happening. Sounds, people talking, people arguing. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you hear gunfire, you hear shots, mm-hmm. too. You hear everything. Like, I remember definitely hearing all that stuff. And, yeah, you come here, it's quiet. It's mm-hmm. quiet. There's no, when you go to the downtown or, like, busy place, there's no, like, food vendors or street mm-hmm. vendors, you know, doing the corn and you buy it from the street. Yeah, that was so different here.
No street food.
We're really selling things on the side of the road and stuff like that.
I miss the street food. I'm not even going to lie. The street food.
Yeah.
I miss her. I miss the fried yam, the akara, the puff puff, the corn, the pear, the plantain chips, all of it.
I've never had the corn on the fire. That probably tastes the best I've ever had.
The roasted one, right?
Roasted corn, yeah.
Like when I moved here, corn is sweet. What made corn sweet? Back home, corn is not sweet. Corn is just corn. Like it just has
I forgot that it was like that because I've been so used to the sweet corn now. And then my sister found a store that sold the unsweetened one, like the OG mm-hmm. that we mm-hmm. know.
Yeah.
And I was like, what's this? It's not sweet. I've been changed. And she's like, this is the one from back home. This is how it tastes.
This is like,
I'm just like, I can't get behind it. Yeah. It's different now.
Yeah. And like one other thing, you probably, because you moved here way before I did, like as a young kid. So you probably won't relate to this, but the currency difference. Because there's Naira, right? Nigeria uses Naira. When I moved here, $1, like USD, was maybe $700, so 700 naira.
Yeah.
So before you spend one, you are calculating. I want to buy burger. How much is burger? $10. So you're telling me one burger is like 8,000 naira.
Wow.
What do you mean by that? You know, and you start to, like, before you make any purchase, you're doing the mathematics. You're exchanging it. Your calculator is out that way. If 2 times 2 is 4, you're telling me that this little handbag that is like this thing, I know how you price things in the markets.
Yeah,
you know
how
to come here and start pricing things. They will escort you out of the store. You know, like, they'll escort you out of the store. I remember why, because when I first got here, like I said, I moved with my mom. So she kind of helped me get my first like winter shoes and my first like coats and stuff. Because I was like, it doesn't fit. Like, I'm cold, but I don't need like this. This is too hot. She's like, just wait. You know? So I was like, mommy, this is expensive. Because we price it. And pricing is basically haggling where you're like, where the seller is like, the seller is like, this thing is $100. You're like, I'll give you 50. And then you settle at 70.
You're like, go negotiate at whatever store you were at.
Literally, that's shopping in Nigeria. Like, if you go and you take the first price someone gives you, you will lose. Yeah. You will lose. Yes. Wow. So when we moved here, we went to, where is it? Payless. Payless was where, because, you know, they used to have really nice, affordable shoes. So that was where my mom took us first. She already, because she's, you know, she travels a lot. I just had not been privileged enough to travel as she had been. So for my first time, she took me to all the places, like, okay, come to Payless, blah, blah, blah. We got there, my mom, this jacket is expensive. How much is this jacket? You're telling me this jacket is $80. And she's like, Sarah, relax. Usually it's the other way around, where we go to the market in Nigeria. I'm the one begging my mom, okay, please, just pay, let's go. So money is definitely a culture shock for me when I moved here as well.
Yeah, that's true. I can see that.
100%. Yeah, okay. We are rounding up, but I just want to ask you a little bit about your work as a spoken word poet. Would you mind just sharing how you got into it?
Yeah, for sure. So I've been now doing like writing and performing poetry for the last like 14 years. I started when like my first experience was like in grade 8. I was a teenager. I was like 14. I had to write for an assignment. And then I was just like, I don't know how to write a haiku. I don't know what that is. And it was the night before the thing is due. So I'm like, man, I got to make up something. I got to give her something. So I just wrote something. And, you know, I was like, oh, this sounds good. It's like, it. I think that's the key thing. It was like, oh, this sounds like it's going to like sound good. So I went to my teacher. I'm like, Miss K, I don't have a haiku, but here it is. And it was about identity. And I went up there and I was like, who's you? Who's you? I don't know you. Define, explain. And I did all the things, not even aware that I was tapping into spoken word poetry. And so after that experience, you know, you're a teenager. I have four older siblings living in a house. You're going through a lot. You're in junior high. So I found outlet in writing and just sitting there and just writing poems and stuff like that, making up stories and just like reading it out to myself. So that was the journey first of just writing and then reading it out to myself. And then I got to high school. I kept writing, but this time I started more sharing. I'm like, oh, hear this piece that I wrote. And then I'd have it memorized. And so I'm like showing everybody and everybody's like, wow, this is great. You know, but I'm still not performing anywhere until after high school. And I got into university. So I was going to Mount Royal at the time. And then there was the African and Caribbean Student Association with the UFC. And they would have Black History Month events and stuff like that. And I knew the guy who was running it at the time, the president at the time. And he was like, yeah, we're having this show. So this is like, I think I did it 2009 and 10. And also simultaneously, I started performing at my church as well. So when we'd have conferences, I would like, they would ask me, okay, write a piece, you know, because at this point now my family knows that I'm doing poetry. I've showed them my stuff. And it's not like it's a secret thing where I'm just now writing in my journal. And so that started the journey of now performing the poetry. And then also at the time, my sister now, like, she gave me a CD of, I think it was called, it's Deaf Poetry Jam. It was in the US, they had this show that was going on, and she had all the CDs for it of all the seasons. And I sat there and I watched all of them. And then I started just just learning about this art form that I had like now just fell in love with. So I was always on YouTube seeing like spoken word artists from the US. There wasn't a lot of references in Calgary or near me to even help me with that. So it was all YouTube. And I would just listen to that. I was writing and just performing here and there. It was mostly like churches. And then I started at Mount Royal. They'd have an event there too. And it wasn't like super serious. At the end of the day, I still have immigrant parents. It's not like I'm like thinking, oh, I'm going to pursue this professionally. It was like, go to school and do this on the side. So it was always like a side thing where it's like, oh, I have time now. Like, let me write and stuff like that. So that has always like in the beginning was the journey was just, this was the side thing that I do as I'm pursuing my bachelor degree in marketing. But then as time goes on, like I'm getting more and more gigs. I'm getting called and into more places. People have known who I am. They call me to events. But it was just this friction of battle of like, how do I balance this? And how long do I keep doing this for? You know, because I'm like, this is not really reaping me any benefits. At the time, I would do it free shows. It was a lot of free shows, you know. Oh, exposure. Do it for exposure and stuff like that. And so you're doing all this, you know, for many, many years you're doing this. And then after a while, it was just like, I always thought, okay, there's going to be a point where I'm going to put this at the back burner and leave it because it doesn't make sense. This is not making me any money. And I got to live. Like, and so how do I do this as a balance? But every time I felt like I would always try to give it up, I'd get people who would tell me how I inspired them, how these words like, man, this is a gift from God. I'm like, yeah, great, gift from God, but gift from God that's not feeding me, you know? Like, yeah. Gift from God, but it's like, I can't pursue this full time because it's like, no, like, it's not, I'm not going to get anywhere with it. Mm-hmm. I had, like, really good gigs and opportunities around, like, the 2015, 2016 mark where I really, like, and I had gone through heartbreak, too, so that's when, like, new writing comes and you just, I've gone through so much, and so you're writing a lot. And so, yeah, there was good opportunities there, and I had filmed my own kind of poetry, always side gig stuff, never front and center. But But I remember, I think in 2019, telling myself for 2020, you need to take this a little more serious and really like put yourself out there as an artist so that you can get booked. Because at this time now I'm getting paid. Like I'm skipping school because I have an event and that event is paying me. So I'm like, sorry, I can't, you know, I can't come. So it's like, now I'm like, you know what? This could be a thing. Like I could do some of it on the side and really make something out of it. And then COVID hit, which really like threw a wrench, and you're thinking, oh, I'm going to write and stuff. But mentally, you're not there. Mentally, you're like, what is happening in the world? What is going on? And so that, like, I took a step back. But honestly, that was the time where I got connected to community. I got connected to the artist community in Calgary. I found so many people through there, and we were having like Zoom events. And that's where I met the Cultural Instigator and became a member of that, where we were, you know, that was a height of like BLM that happened. And I had written poems at the time for like art. I wouldn't, like, for me, it was personal of like the things that I've witnessed in the world of Black injustices that I have spoken about and I'd written like years before. And so during when the height of the BLM movement happened after George Floyd, and then there was protests, I performed a piece at the Olympic Plaza and it blew up. Like people were reaching out to me then, and you know, there was so much movement, and I started working on different projects in the art community. And that was where, like, because I had, obviously with COVID, I wasn't back at my regular job. So it was like, okay, well, these opportunities are here. Like, let me start working on what's in front of me right now. So it was that. And, you know, as things started opening up again, I was getting a lot more involved in the arts community, but also doing my practice. And people, I've never like really put myself out there, but by the grace of God and the people I'm connected with, my name has been passed down so many places that I'm getting called from people. I have no idea how they even got my information to come do this and or do it at do performances at a school and talk to students. And so that journey has just been wonderful now, and opening up to me now teaching poetry for the last like several years. And oh man, that has given me so much joy, because as for me as a poet, I learned by myself these skills that I like know is self-taught and is just like, it's innate to me. And so, but to give it back to artists who are trying to get into this field is a joy. And it also refines my own practice as well. And so I'm like now a full-time artist, where I'm either doing workshops teaching, or I'm performing or working on different projects that just, you know, help my lifestyle. And so I'm having the time of my life working in this field. I never imagined that I would be a full-time artist doing this, but I'm so glad to be in this and doing that. And that has been my journey, and it's continuing, and I'm hoping to grow and expand from just not just Calgary, but worldwide, and continue to do what I love to do. And that's poetry.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Thank you for sharing that. And shout out to those like moments, you know, like in high school where you're like, this is not a haiku, but it is something.
Something. And here it is.
Run me my A+, please. Run it quickly.
And like, it took a lot of reflection, because I'm like, when did I actually start? And it was that moment I realized like that was my first journey with poetry. And so, man, it's been so many years, and I've just like cultivated this, and to be able to now do it like where I thought it was a back burner, and then I have the support of my parents too, that are not like pushing back at me. Is like amazing. Like I have this video of my dad filming me just this year, and he's like talking to some random lady, and he's like, that's my daughter. It puts tears in my eyes. I'm like, oh my gosh, here I am. And my parents are so supportive. They always are asking me, where's my show? They keep playing my videos, even though it's like irritating to hear my own voice. I'll just hear them in their office or respective places just listening to me, and I'm like, oh wow, like, I'm onto something. So that's where I'm like, you know what, God has put me in this path, and I have to honor that and keep going and see where it takes me.
Yeah. Oh, that is beautiful. Like when African parents eventually get on board, when they get on board, it will take the Lord and time and patience.
But, and reaping benefits too.
And working your ass off to, you know, ensure that you're still growing and you're good, right? Honing that skill. But when you do hear that approval, it's
so good.
Chef's kiss. It's so validating and it feels good. Like, I'm not a disappointment after all. Yeah. I'm not a failure after all.
You know what? The thing is, at the end of the day, I got the degree. I got everything that I needed.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? You do it.
Yeah.
It's for them. But it's like, now I'm doing what I want to do, you know. But the next show and they come, you know. And it's like, when I have my parents in the audience, I feel so happy. I feel so good.
Yeah.
It's so heartwarming.
It really is. It really is. Awesome. Yeah. Okay. Thank you for sharing that story with us. Can you talk a little bit about what holding on to your identity as a, you know, a young lady from DRC living in Canada? Now you've lived here longer even than you lived back home, right? What is kind of standing in your identity as a dual citizen and, you know, someone with multiple like cultural backgrounds? Like, how do you stand firm in that without kind of bowing to one and neglecting the other? Like, do you know what I mean?
Oh, I definitely know what you mean. It's always, I feel like that identity struggle is always happens, because I remember when I was 14, it was 7 years since I now been here, and it was 7 years since I've been in South Africa. So I'm like, oh man, I like distinctly remember, I'm like, I've been here the same amount. So after this year, it's going to be Canada that's going to take the lead. And I felt like, can I even still say, because I would always say at the time, right, because I didn't live in Congo. I had no idea about Congo. And the thing is, there was so much happening. And I feel like my parents had a lot of hurt with the war and how things were going back home. And my parents were always like, we're not going back. We're never going back to Congo, especially with who the president was at the time. And, you know, it was just so much like we cut it off. So I even had a hard time identifying myself as a Congolese. During that time, and I would just say, oh yeah, I lived in South Africa, I'm from South Africa. But then now I started living here longer and I'm like, oh, I don't even speak any South African languages at all except for English, like, and I'm like losing memories. How can I even, like, now that struggle, I'm like, can I even still, would they still claim me? And then, you know, you think about the xenophobia that goes on in South Africa big time, which is so off-putting.
And heartbreaking.
Like, why am I gonna say I'm from there when they would never claim me either? So, and then it was that thing about going back to my place, my roots, where I'm an indigenous person of Congo. And so that took a long, I feel like that took a long time, because you want to belong to somewhere. Yeah, you feel like you belong in Canada, but it's still like,
not the same.
It's not the same. It really isn't the same. So you struggle. I don't know if other people do that, but they struggle. I struggled in my identity, especially when you come here as a kid. When you come here and you're super young and you just try to like make sure your English sounds English. And when someone tells you you have an accent, what do you mean I have an accent? You know, you get offended. Yeah. Whereas now it's like, the older I got, is the more pride I have. I'm like, do I have an accent? I'm like, thank you. Yeah. Like, I'm like, wow, that's so great. I've been living here and I still have an accent. So I'm like happy about it now. And then seeing my parents like going back home, it reconnected me to the roots. And also just for myself, like even writing a poem about Congo and connecting myself back to my roots, I seeked out like all these things that I don't know, and finding community in Congolese people. I remember there was this app during COVID, I forgot what it was called, where people were just chatting and stuff like that. I think it was called, I forgot what it was, but there was Congolese groups from everywhere, like from the diaspora, people from the UK, people from Canada, US, all Congolese people. And we'd have rooms where we would just talk about things that are going on. And it was so, it filled my heart that it was like, oh man, this is my identity. And now you stand, like, as the older I get, the more I'm deeply rooted in that. And I'm like, no one can take that away from me. Yeah. No matter even myself, I'm like, this is who I am. And so you get back, it's like a full circle. You come back to yourself again, and you're like, yeah. And so it just makes me excited to even go back home and be amongst my people and be like, I'm an indigenous person here. I'm from this land. This is the land that bore me. Oh my gosh. Like, cause I feel that for the indigenous people here in Canada. I'm like, this is their land.
Yeah.
This is theirs that they claim, and no one else can do that. No one else can claim that. Not any European settlers. You can't claim it. Yeah. And I feel sad for the people that don't know where trace their lineage back. And I know where my lineage is. And so when it comes to identity, you know, you struggle when you're younger about it because you're always wanting to fit in. You're always wanting to be part of that group. There's not many Congolese people here, specifically even in Calgary. And if there is, we're all kind of spread out in comparison to even other African cultures like Nigerians. There's so many Nigerians, but like Congolese, you'll find us like specks. But if you go to Montreal, you'll find a lot of Congolese
people. Yeah, because of the French.
Yeah, in the French places. So now being here, I'm so proud to be Congolese, and I wear it with a proud of like a flag around me being like, yeah, I'm Congolese. Like, I'll say it with my chest. I'll wear it on my wrist, you know?
Yeah.
So, it took a long time, but yeah. And I still identify as a Canadian too. And I'm proud also to be Canadian. Like, it's been a long time, and this is a place I also call home. But it's nice to know that I have two homes. It's nice to know that I have somewhere to go and stuff like that. But I'm proud of both places for sure.
Yes. Thank you for sharing that. For me, when I first moved here, I had to kind of sit back and come to terms with who I am and be rock solid in that all over again. Do you know what I mean? Like, where I'm from, my grandfather's address. Like, I know where I'm from. I know who I am. I know where I'm coming from. But that I'm not an outsider here. Either, right? This is also home, and we can have two homes. There's nothing wrong with that, you know? And I think sometimes, like, there's some guilt that comes with, like, oh, well, it's been a while since I went back, and like, I miss the food. I wish I was, you know, and sometimes, like, that can really weigh heavy, especially when horrible things happen, right? Like, by the time you start, you get reminded that you are Black, you know, and then you're just like, you know, like, you just, there's that moment of like, if I could go back in a second, if our leaders get their shit together.
Yeah.
If our leaders get it together,
go back with speed
immediately.
Yeah.
Immediately, right? But everyone's looking for a better life, and everyone's looking for, you know, for opportunities, right? And I always say, like, there's no perfect society. Like, immigration is trading one set of problems for a new set of problems, right? Because Canada is not la la land. Like, you know, like, it's not perfect here. It's not perfect in the US. It's not perfect in the UK. It's not perfect back home either, right? But then it's deciding, you know, for yourself and your family, like, what works, right? There's some people whose, like, parents bring them here for a better life and all that. But by the time they grow up and become adults for themselves, they're like, nah, I don't want to stay here. And they move back, right? Or they move to a different country. And like, because that's the beauty of choice. And just deciding for your life and like what you need and what works for you. And there are people who put in all the work and energy and stress to move here, and they get here, they're like, no, I would rather deal with our bombastic, you know, society or whatever is going on there, then deal with this, right? Because, like, you know, people have different tolerances and people's experiences are very different. So I always ask that question because, like, people have different ways that they kind of ground themselves in their body and in a space and on the land, right? So, yeah. Awesome. This has been such an incredible conversation, Miss Priscilla. I really, really, really appreciate you. Would you mind sharing your social media so that people can know when next year you're having a, you know, spoken word teaching or spoken word event or any of that? Would you mind sharing that?
Yeah, for sure. I'm mostly on Instagram, but this handle is for also Twitter and Threads. The handle is Priscilla, my name, PRISCILLE, and then Buck with BUCK, all one word, no symbols on there, just Priscilla Buck. And you can find me on Instagram there. My Linktree, I try to keep it updated with events and stuff. I'm really trying to be better at like putting myself out there and telling people when I have a... So you can find me on that, on those platforms as well.
Yeah, awesome. Priscilla, shout out to you, man, because your dear listeners, Priscilla was a spoken word poet at a film screening that I had for one of my film projects. And the subject matter was mental health. Mm-hmm. And oh my gosh, like your poem, man, was so powerful. Thank you. So incredible, right? And like, yeah, I think I still have it because you sent me the lyrics. I'm going to hold on to it forever. And again, I could never read it in my head as you would perform it because, like, you know, a lot of spoken word is literally spoken. It's a performance, right? Mm-hmm. And the poem by itself is a poem. But by the time it's spoken and performed by the writer, like, it just takes it up to like the gods, like it literally, and like you literally embodied that poem and it just was beautiful. If you are looking for a spoken word artist, a spoken word poet, if you're looking for someone that can craft English language for you ladies, that you will feel moved, please hit up Priscilla on social media or however else you want to get in touch with her. She's incredibly talented and, you know, you will not be disappointed. You'll be inspired.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me on this show and also even for having me at your event and feature, like for me to write a piece for you. I was so excited that the topic was heavy, but it was like necessary. So just being in community with you and connected with you, I'm so happy to have known you and to continue to do work together. So thank you so much.
Yes, this is awesome. Okay, before you leave, just leave a word of advice, a word of wisdom. Just, you know, leave us with something before you leave.
Yeah, I guess we'll stick with a theme of identity. Just, you know, and how I said in my poem that I wrote when I was in grade 8, who's you, who's you? I think it's important to know who you are and to stand firm in who you are and don't be ashamed of it. And also, you're allowed to be more than one thing. Don't feel like you're stuck to one identity. I think also that's a big deal for me. And what I struggled with is that you have to define yourself as one person and stick to that. No, you're multiple things. You're a daughter, you're a friend, you're an artist, you're Congolese, you're Nigerian, whatever you are, you're many multiple things. You're not just one thing. So don't stick to one thing and feel like you have to stay there and you can't move around and change as you get older and as you, you know, change your mind. So you can be that, but just know who you are inside. So that is my wisdom.
Thank you. And I received that.
I'm able to give you a shout out for all the things that you're involved in. Like, and then I get to see like the costume design that you did in Edmonton. And I got to see that show in Edmonton.
Right. Oh,
I was so happy. And I had to congratulate you because that was an amazing show. So keep doing what you do. Like, your stuff is necessary in this city.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it, Priscilla. Thank you again so much, Priscilla, for gracing us with your presence and just sharing your story with us today. And for our listeners, thank you again for sticking with us through another episode. We'll catch you on the next one. Bye. Thank you for joining us on this episode of Afros in the Diaspora. I hope this episode left you feeling inspired and hopeful. To engage, feel free to like, follow, share, and subscribe to Afros in the Diaspora on all social media and podcast platforms. Remember to leave a review and a rating. If you would like to be a guest, please reach out. Send an email to hi@afrosinthediaspora.com. That is hi@afrosinthediaspora.com. Or send us a DM on Instagram @AfrosInTheDiaspora. Remember, there is beauty in our stories and power in our voices. Together, we are stronger. Until next time.